Yeah, thanks a lot, Bob. Maybe I'll tell you a straw poll to start with. Put your hand up if you're a member of the American Angus Association. Okay, so we got quite a few members out there. Yeah, we did do a webinar and some education. A lot of this is going to be repeating that, but like someone pointed out, yeah, but at that point we didn't know how the bulls were going to rank. And now we've actually seen how our animals rank, so you might have more questions. So I think it's good to go over it again. I'm going to do a few slides here and a bit of an introduction, then I'll turn it over to Jason to talk specifically about survey outcomes and some of the features of the index. And then I'm going to get into how we revise some of the EPD calculations and finally some outcomes and what these indexes look like. A little bit about the team, and I appreciate, Scott, your introduction, because Scott covered some really good basics, but also a bit of history about selection indexes and who's involved. And he mentioned a couple people there, and the one was Lush and Hazel. And Hazel's student was actually Charlie Smith, who you mentioned. But Charlie Smith's student is Peter Amer, here at Abacus Bio, and Peter, I think, has probably got about as much experience with selection index as anyone left in animal breeding. So it was a great opportunity to partner with Abacus Bio on this. Before I talk about this team, I'd like to talk to about another one, and they're in the audience here, some of them anyways, and that's actually, this project really started 2 years ago, and that is talking to the board of directors about redoing our indexes and what the project's going to be and how we're going to fund it. And they backed up the project and have stood behind it, and that's a big part of getting the work done. So I'd like to thank them for that. Dan and Kelly, obviously a big part of putting this together. This team at the bottom, besides Jason, are a bunch of faces you don't know. But I use the analogy, you know, we recently moved to Missouri, and we're going to buy a house, and I showed my wife a picture of the house, and she says, I don't like that house, it's orange. The inside was kind of painted, kind of Santa Fe, orange, you know. Don't worry, honey, I'll paint it, right? So we bought the house. 2 years in, still not painted. So this past winter, you know, I started in the evenings and on weekends, I'm painting, and I'm probably 60% done now, not quite. So people can say, well, Steve, we're going to develop indexes. You know, you've developed selection indexes in beef cattle before. Why don't you just do it? It'd be a bit like me painting my house. It might take a lot longer. And at this point in time, you would not have indexes implemented. So really, it's basically part of this is you hire a team of professionals and you get it done. And this is what what Abacus brings to the table. So another important part of the process. So as breeders, you know, you woke up May 31st and you had numbers on the internet and everything sorted right and everything was where it was supposed to be and it all worked. And that's largely because of this team here. And those are some of the people. Duke Liu's giving a presentation, another session this afternoon, kind of crunching a lot of numbers behind the new EPDs that went out. Our information systems team does a great job, but they've done a ton of work in the last 2 months to basically get all this implemented. And coming from an academic background originally, you realize there's just a lot of work that needs to get done to actually get it out to producers and communicate it and all that. So there's a kind of a big team behind all this. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Jason, and I'll come back up later.
Thanks, Steve. I might wander around a little bit. So I think I talked at this conference last year, and I guess the point that I was making was the approach that we use to try and get user feedback, to produce an index that that people will use and that they believe. And I talked about doing a survey, and we were about to release the survey at the time. So the first part of this whole project, we did a reasonably significant survey, and it was really to understand what people were saying about traits. Are there different priorities between different groups, and what are your priorities? So we had a survey. It ran from July to October. It had two components to it, which I'll talk about in a minute. We were delighted with the responses that we got. We needed probably about 500 responses to get a sort of a valid view of the world. We actually got 3,000 or over 3,000 responses. 2,500 completed the first part of the survey, and 1,700 got right through the entire survey, which given that probably it took about 30 minutes to do and probably a lot of people in the room actually did it, was a fair effort to get to the end of it. I guess on the... The carrot was you get to have your say if you got to the end of it, so you had some input. So in terms of responses and just who and where they came from, we asked about the main business activity. So a lot of the responses, of the 2,500 responses, 1,600 or so were from breeders, of which the vast majority were actually Angus, registered Angus members. We had some commercial cow-calf people, about 30% or 29%. There were 16 feedlotters that responded, so not a great number, and 189 people who retain ownership. So we had a fair coverage of the sector, obviously dominated by breeders, but had enough commercial people in there to give some good representation. And we really do, you know, an index is really should be built for the commercial customer, not the breeder. And those, here's a bit of a breakdown of where they came from, and I guess the bottom line is they came from everywhere pretty much. 49 states represented in 8 countries. And I don't think we actually used the 8 countries. We filtered the data, so that was American data. So I talked about there's 2 parts of the survey, and the first part was a bunch of, I guess, traditional types of demographic questions, like what you'd find on any survey. The second part is what's called 1,000 Minds, which is really an implementation of an economics technique called conjoint analysis. You don't need to know the name of it, but Scott referred to a few economists and different approaches to producing indexes. Well, 1,000 Minds is really a technique to get people to say what would they trade off against each other. So in this case, in this particular question, you're asked to trade off, do you want 8 more heifers per 100 suitable as replacements because they've got good feet? Or actually would you rather drive mature cow weight down by 60 pounds? And which one of those do you prefer? And the levels of these are all chosen to be roughly equal in terms of the economic importance from modelling. So you're actually genuinely giving your preference. You know, if we said, do you want 50 pounds more weaning versus 0.5% better calving, you'd probably take the 50 pounds more weaning. It's an obvious one. But so we make it so it's not an obvious decision, but it's a genuine reflection of your preference for those traits. And at the end of that, every participant has effectively given us their particular preference ranking. And so I did the survey and as an example just the other day, and that was my ranking. I actually wanted more cow body condition score as my number one and longevity of cows. Got to marbling down here, which I thought was interesting because actually I thought I would emphasise marbling a lot more than what I did. But there you go. So every participant basically gives us effectively this data by doing this survey. And so therefore we can look at across the whole preferences. Now, I'm going to make it really clear, this does not determine the index. You know, we're not doing desired gains based on these preferences. It's a picture of what people are telling us. And so we put all that information together from every participant and we have a look at what they say. And if we take the people who are involved in the maternal enterprise, commercial cow-calf, retained owner, seed stock breeder, basically the lower the number here, the higher the preference. So number one is your most preferred trait going down. And in general, you can see that the sort of traits that are getting the highest preference are things like cow survival, docility, foot score, heifer pregnancy, weaning weight. And that may or may not surprise anyone in this room. I guess what surprised me, and I come from a different perspective, I suppose, in a different part of the world with different production systems, is cow mature weight, for example, was not very strong in the preferences. but maybe that won't surprise you. But this is the distribution of what people are telling us that they want. There are also some differences between these sort of people, and as you would expect, the retained owners, people who retain ownership through to slaughter, for example, if you look at marbling, significantly more emphasis that they would like to put on marbling than the seed stock breeder or the person who's just a commercial cow-calf sales at weaning. So that's probably not surprising either. In terms of the growers and feedlot finishers, and remember there were only 16 of them, but their preferences, number one was basically efficiency, and then equally ranked 2, 3, and 4 were pretty much health, feedlot gain, and marbling. Interestingly, yield grade was almost the last, and weight was actually the last in terms of what those people wanted. Here's just another snapshot of bull. We asked people what their bull selection criteria were, and these are the rankings along here. So for all the people involved in EPDs and EBVs and dollar indexes, which I include myself in, well, you're number 5 down the list of what people are looking for when they're buying a bull. So almost everyone says structure is number 1, and they rank it as 5 when you get an importance rating of 1 to 5. Few people are ranking it 4, but hardly any, just about universal acceptance of that. And then appearance, performance, pedigree, before we get to using EPDs and dollar index values as an information source. So what impact has that had on our index construction? Well, in essence, we've tried to place a reasonably decent amount of emphasis on what you call cow functional traits. Many of these are new EPDs, or they're EPDs that actually don't even exist yet, so we haven't been able to put it on. So I guess in that I'm referring to stability or longevity, cow longevity, which is an EPD which is on Angus's development program, but isn't here yet. But the traits of foot score, docility, those sort of things, we have built those into the index as a result of the feedback. And so structure, and so that's the foot score one that I was just talking about, is also included in the index. You can also have a look at all those preferences, and you can start to say, well, actually, what's driving differences between people, and are there clusters of people? How does that all distribute? And you can do what's called a principal components analysis, and I won't bore you with the detail of the science, but basically what you find is that there are some traits that really drive the differences. You can also do a cluster analysis and see what groupings there are of people that fall into different camps. And in essence, we think this data is showing us, really, not we think, there are three groupings, and this probably won't surprise you that much either. So there's a group of people that rank traits like marbling, feedlot gain, yield, efficiency in the feedlot very highly. And we chose to call these the production group. And if you look across the type of traits, that you can see the green traits, the dark green colours are where the stronger preferences were, and the reds are where they had a lower preference for those traits. There's another group of people that basically I would say are more maternally focused and look at the typical traits that you would think of from a maternal point of view. So cow survival, heifer pregnancy, calving ease, foot score, docility, those all came into it. There's a third group of people, and it is a smaller group of people, but they are emphasising traits. They are still on the side of the maternal type of traits, so they want these maternal traits, but they are saying, actually, we want to reduce cow weight, we want to reduce cow frame score, we rank body condition score very highly, and actually probably down here we don't want so much emphasis on milk. We've called those, give them a name I guess, people who want cows for hard environments. Rightly or wrongly, that's the label that we've put on it. So basically there are three clusters of people out there. So you might think, well, all the people in the hard in the hard environments that want the cow for the hard environments, they're all the people in the West, say. But actually, it's amazing. We actually took this is a classification of America, And we looked at these categories because we had all the IP addresses for where these people were and where they'd answered the survey from. And we look across into where they want. And these pink bars are the people who want the cow for the hard environment. The green bars are the people who are maternally focused. And the blue bars are the people who are production focused. And actually what you can see is, yes, there is a trend, say, for people in what's the Highland, which is the grey down there, they tend to be people who want the cows in the harsh environment. But actually, every group is represented in every region of the country in significant proportions. So I think there's a thing there. It's as much about how you farm, how you approach things, how you think about supplementation of animals, all those sort of things, as it is determined by your actual physical environment. And we've actually found that in other work in other places too, where you can have people right next door but with very different preferences and trait rankings, people in the same environment. So there's basically three major groupings identified. And so how did that impact on how we construct the index? Well, it's sort of, I guess, the way the indexes were already, and we tried to follow that. So the dollar beef, I guess, emphasises those traits or contains the traits that the more production-oriented people are emphasising. And then there's the dollar maternal, which was the new index produced. And we did toss up whether we should have two new maternal indexes, but the decision was made that we actually need, there is a premium on simplicity as well. But there are other ways that if you are of that persuasion where you want those smaller cows that maintain body condition score, you can put additional emphasis by looking at the traits as well as looking at the maternal index. So almost putting an independent culling level on top of an index. So the traits with the most different views were marbling, milk, and cow size. So I'll just run through three or four traits of interest just to point out a couple of features before I hand over to Steve, because he'll talk about the outcomes of all this when we get to the end of this. Where are we going? Sorry. So functional traits. So we asked this question, how much do you agree with the statement up there, which is that there is a need for a maternal index that also includes functional traits such as foot score, docility, and udder conformation, which is not an EPD that the society currently has. But I guess it was getting at the concept of functional traits in general. And actually, no matter what persuasion you are, whether you're a production trait persuasion, whether you're maternal, or whether you for a cow for the harder environment persuasion, the agreement rate with that statement was very high. So there was really there was a mandate to put those sort of traits into the index. Those traits rank very well with all respondents, and we really had that mandate to do that. So basically what we've done is we've put foot score and docility were both included in the maternal index. But the question is, how do you do that? And, you know, there's a range of different ways to do it. The way we chose to do it was to use a survival sort of stability, I guess, economic model. And so for foot score, we said, what's the cost of a cow getting to 4 or 5 years of age and then having to be culled because she's got poor feet? So that's the way we put the economic value on it, is that culling decision. And we did a very similar thing with docility. We said, what's the cost of having a heifer, she has her first calf, and at that point you decide that you can't live with her. She's got to go down the road because of temperament. Well, there's a cost to that, and that's the cost of having to generate a new replacement, feed that replacement, minus her cow value and that sort of thing. So that's the approach that we've used to incorporate foot score and docility into the index. Now, I'm sure there are other approaches that we could have used. That just happens to be the one that we chose and trying to represent, I guess, what we think is happening out there. So milk's a topic that gets talked about a lot. And was also one of the traits that was, I guess, highly differentiated in the survey. So what have people actually said about milk in the thing? So we actually asked, well, firstly, what was the rank for milk that came out of the Thousand Minds type of approach? So maternal people ranked at 5.7, remembering that probably the best trait was about 3.5 to 4, because not everyone's going to agree and rank at number one. So reasonably high priority in the maternal grouping of people. Actually not, probably middle of the road priority in the production group of people. Lowest priority for people that wanted those tough cows for the tough environment, I guess. And there's also a bunch of people who either didn't get right through the survey, and so therefore we didn't have that data on them, so we've called them non-defined. And so when we came to the demographics part of the survey, we also asked, what are your minimum and maximum values that you accept? And we did that for a lot of traits because people generally have a range that they will accept or use a bull that fall in the range. So the cow for the hard environment type people as a group, they basically said they want an EPD between 18 and 28. That was their response. The people, basically all the other groupings, essentially said they want an EPD between 20 and, let's call that, 32. So there's a difference there, but it's probably not as different as all the talk that goes on, to be honest. And then we actually had the member numbers for everyone, so we could actually have a look at what's the average milk EPD in their cow herd. And these are the results. So people who want a cow with a hard environment, 22.9, and the others are about 23 point something. So I probably need to say no more. There's not much difference. So essentially, they're using the same group of bulls, in essence. We also asked a question, what's your opinion on the milk potential of your cow herd? And 75% said, I'm happy where I am. 14% said, I want a bit more. And this grey one, 6% said, I want less. And 5% said, it's of no concern to me. I'm not worried about milk at all. So what have we done? Well, we've actually implemented a non-linear feature in the milk EPD, or in the index driving off the milk EPD. So essentially, if you're a low milk bull, I guess you get a lower value. And as we get higher up the scale, we get to a point that's around about the middle of the 20 to 32 type area, and we actually flatten out. Now, the actual function flattens out, but this here is a graph of a bunch of cows and how they and this line describes how that index response is happening. It's not the actual index function within the index, because when you're actually looking at animals, you've then got trait relationships and all these sort of things going on. So this is a bunch of cows that we've used their EPDs and driven the index. But essentially what you can see is that you'll get to a certain point sort of in that mid-20s type range, and you get very little benefit. In fact, you actually get no extra benefit allocated to you above that range once you've hit the middle of what people are telling us is the sweet spot. And up here, if you're a bull that's got an EPD of 40, you're not going to get any advantage from having that higher EPD over an animal that is in the middle of in the range. So what that means in practice is that those bulls are not going to shoot to the top of the index simply on milk. They can get to the top of the index, but they have to get there by other traits, by being good for other traits. And I think that makes sense. It seems to resonate with people. It makes sense. Mature weight, again, looking at these rankings, so the people that, I guess that was almost the differentiator for the people that want cows for harder environments, tend to want to drive mature right down, so they give that a higher ranking than the rest of people. And we had some ranges, again, for those of what they said what they would accept as minimums and maximums. And they were definitely lower for this class of people. And their actual EPDs are lower, but only by 6 or 7 pounds, so not a whole lot. We also asked what's the optimal cow size for your environment, and then they said, and then asked them what the mature cow, the approximate mature size of your own cows is. And by and large, if you compare those two numbers, you say most people are actually pretty happy with where their cows are. There is a group of people, though, that do want to drive cow size down a little bit. So the conclusion is probably no one's really out there saying they want cows to get bigger. There is some desire for reduction in cow size. And so we look very closely at cow weight when we're evaluating the indexes. So we run these indexes, as Scott was describing, across groups of bulls and look at the values and make sure that they make sense. So we look very closely when you're evaluating indexes, and it is a balancing act. I think Lee said in his talk yesterday, and he was dead right, that actually it's incredibly hard to produce an index that balances up maternal traits versus terminal and get that balance exactly as you'd want it. So indexes tend to get dominated by terminal traits. Basically, the cow weight thing, it is driven by the economics of it as to where we ended up. So another question we asked people was, well, do you want a specialist heifer index? And I think the 47% said yes and 53% said no. So, it's a 50-50 call. But actually, the index that we ended up doing, it's not a specialist heifer index. It incorporates heifers and calving ease to the level of what you would expect if a bull was mating both cows and heifers in the proportion of what they are in the herd. So the logic for that really is that people can still choose a heifer bull simply by putting an independent culling level on calving ease after they've had a look at the index. So that's the way we chose to do it. And again, there's a premium for simplicity in terms of communication. So rather than produce a dozen indexes and different maternal indexes for heifers versus cows, etc., we chose to do the one. We also looked at, asked a bunch of questions about calving ease and how closely you supervise animals and how much you were prepared to trade off. So we said, would you trade off calving ease for extra production? And 40% of people said, no, I wouldn't trade calving ease off for any extra weaning weight. 40% said they'd maybe trade off 6% less calving ease to get some extra weaning weight. And 20% would trade off 9%. So some people will trade off, but not a lot. So this is what's been implemented in terms of the actual maternal calf, the calving ease part of it. So this is for direct calving ease, but there's a very similar pattern is implemented for maternal calving ease as well. So again, it's not a specialised heifer index, but when you get above a level of around about 10, you don't really get any extra credit. Whereas if you're down here at minus 10, you get a decent penalty put on you. So again, what that means is that the bulls with poor calving ease will struggle to get near the top of the index. But if I've got a calving ease of 15, I'm not going to get that extra advantage. So we're not going to see all these really high calving ease bulls shoot to the top of the index just simply because they're high calving ease bulls and probably lower growth type of animals. So they're not going to shoot to the top of the index because of that. And I think that makes good sense and tends to resonate with people as well. And so that's some features, and now I'll hand over to Steve and he can tell you about some of the changes, the EPDs and the outcomes for the index that resulted.
Okay, thanks, Jason. So, covered kind of the changes that got implemented on the 31st of May. And the first, I think, we talked a lot about the indexes and the fact that we rebuilt the indexes, released new indexes, but in doing that, we also changed two really important EPDs, and that's mature weight, which features heavily in the maternal index, and feed efficiency and everything related to intake. And the reason behind that is really this graph. This was what our genetic trend graphs looked like before May 31st. And you know what's wrong with this graph? Well, here's our genetic trend. Here was our genetic trend for yearling weight, and it's basically the same today. We didn't change that. And as far as our genetic trends go, you know that's a trait that we've got the most data in, going way back to the 70s, well recorded. It's probably our most solid genetic trend. And then we have evaluations for mature weight here and dry matter intake here that really don't match that trend. And that's essentially a symptom of a problem. And we saw something similar when we rebuilt the carcass weight model back in 2017. And we basically applied the same fix or the same improvement to the model for mature weight and dry matter intake that we did with carcass weight back in 2017, basically what we learned through that process. Now, I've been involved with genetic evaluations in different countries and different species and different things, and I think most geneticists, if they would have walked in and saw what Angus was doing, well, doesn't look like anything's really wrong with that. That people do that kind of thing everywhere. But what we've realized working through this is that there's some advantages to doing it differently, and this is what we've done. So this is what we were doing. Essentially, we do different evaluations. We do an evaluation for growth, and there's like 11 million animals in that evaluation. So, you know, all the birth weight, all the weaning weight, all the yearling weight, all the contemporary groups, and the pedigree that goes back in time. And then we do the same for mature weight. We take all the mature weights we got, and we bring in the correlated traits and their contemporaries, and we add up all the pedigree, and we have an evaluation there with about 1 million animals in it. We do the same for feed intake. So we've got about 25,000 animals with feed intake, but we've got their contemporaries and related animals with ultrasound and gain measurements, and we do three independent evaluations. So you'd wonder why a trait like once you put post-weaning gain in, or yearling weight, you know, what's the value of adding in weaning weight? And why is that important to bring in those animals? In reality, it turns out it's really important. And this just a little example. Here's a group of 8 animals in a weaning contemporary, and there's some variation there. So if all you guys are breeders, or a lot of you are breeders, so you realize, well, they don't all go on to be bulls, right? Some of them, you basically call them at weaning. And which ones do you call at weaning? Well, you typically call the smallest ones. So the groups that go on to have dry matter intake evaluation, for example, they're a selected group. They were selected at weaning. And there's a correlation between weaning and post-weaning. So that group is already above average for growth rate. And it's important to take account of that. We call that pre-selection. If we don't include all the weaning weights in with all the post-weaning gains, we don't account for that pre-selection. So that's essentially what we've done. So now we have an evaluation that looks like this. Basically, all the animals with growth records are in the mature weight evaluation, are in the feed intake evaluation. All the weaning weights, all the yearling weights that are at Angus. That creates an evaluation that takes a lot longer to run, but that's okay. And so now we have genetic trends that look a lot different. So this was our dry matter intake trend. It wasn't tracking, you know. It just makes sense. You know, if cattle are bigger, growing faster, they eat more. On average, there's variation there. That's feed efficiency, and we want to account for that. And that's what we're trying to evaluate. But on average, across all the animals, we've been making them bigger. They should be eating more. And our trend now tracks that nicely. And the same with mature weight. Our trend for mature weight, this is the new one. That was the old one, the brown one. It is now tracking with yearling weight. There's a difference between these two here, and that's just the base difference we've got in mature weight. So that's kind of a little bit irrelevant. So how do our new EPDs correlate to the old ones? It's basically 0.8, and yeah, that's high, but there's a lot of re-ranking. right? There's lots of re-ranking at a 0.8 correlation. And as breeders, and the other thing you would have noticed is there's a whole lot more variation now in intake of mature weight EPDs. You know, these animals that had lots of growth data but no mature weight data, they had, you know, in the old system, they had really high yearling weights, and they didn't have high mature weights. And that really wasn't the best evaluation of those animals. So this is up. These are individual animals, new versus old. So this is old on this axis, and this is new on this axis. And what we see here is an animal, a good example. So we had a yearling weight of 125. That's kind of high, kind of on the high side. In the old system, he was way down here, less than 6. He had a 16 on mature weight. He now has an EPD of basically 71 for mature weight. If I was to compare old versus new, you know, he used to sit out here, basically down near the bottom for mature weight, but he's up here for growth. Now he basically sits the middle of the pack, which makes more sense. Similar story with dry matter intake, similar graphs. I could show them, but I decided it's basically the same story. So something else to consider here. Well, you've linked dry matter intake or mature weight now with yearling weight, so those things are linked. Well, they're not really completely linked. There's lots of variation there in terms of that's yearling weight and that's mature weight. So we've got animals that have 140 yearling weight. Some of them have got a 50-something mature weight EPD, and some of them got 120 yearling weight mature weight EPD. There's still lots of variation at the same yearling weight EPD for either mature weight or DMI. Talk a little bit about this, what's the herd structure we've modeled behind behind the index. And it's a little bit complicated, but not too complicated. Basically, what we're trying to do is model what really happens out there in the industry. So this is, sometimes we hear from seed stock breeders to say, well, I've got a much higher replacement rate than that in my herd. You know, I keep a lot more heifers. Yeah, but you're a seed stock producer. The index is trying to model your commercial customer. It's how are those bulls going to rank for their impact for profit in the commercial industry. So the commercial industry, the way we've modeled it is, there's, if this is a herd of, we've modeled here essentially as a herd of 500 cows. Within a group of 500 cows, there's, and this, let's say, think of, that's a herd, but really think about it as the whole industry. There's some cows that aren't going to generate any replacements. You're going to breed them to a terminal sire. And that's basically this group of cows here. All their progeny are going to go as right straight to market. There's then this kind of 4/5 or 80% of the population that we need to get replacements from. And this is where we're saying Angus bulls are going to get used. So in the first generation here, we're going to use our Angus bull on these heifers, replace the herd with, as well as the other progeny are all going to go to market. So there's actually a 25% replacement rate from these 400 cows to basically keep those 500 cows alive. That is a 20%. We heard it yesterday, I think, in one of the questions. Well, you know, industry-wide, the replacement rate is about 20%, and that's basically what we found. But we're going to keep a bit more replacements from those Angus sires in that first generation, 25%. Scott, I think, already mentioned discounted genetic expression, so thanks again for the lead-in. And I just drew a little diagram here to explain this. But we're going to use this sire, and this sire is generating some progeny. And he's got a direct progeny here, which is a steer calf. And that steer calf is carrying half the genetics, obviously, from that sire, or all his EPD, half his genetics, or all his EPD in this case. And he's created a daughter who then has a progeny herself. That's carrying a quarter of the weaning weight genetics from that sire, or half of the EPD. So we have to add these things up. You know, where's but there's a lag here in terms of, there's about 2 years difference between this group of progeny and then these grand progeny. And so we need to discount that for time. You know, a dollar, if I offered you a dollar today, or I'll pay a dollar 10 years from now, you want more today. And there's about a 5% discount rate, so we account for that, and we start summing up all these expressions. On the maternal side, the bull's milk is going to express in his daughters. And so we have a bull like this, and he's generated, this daughter's actually going to have multiple calves over time. Each time she's expressing that bull's milk EPD as well as half of his growth EPD, and she's going to do that repeatedly. But sometimes she's going to actually generate a replacement that we're going to keep. And so now she's generating the pink ears for replacements and the blues for males, or that are going to go on and go on to the feedlot. But this here's so she's going to generate a replacement. So there's another generation. So we kind of got the sire, we got his daughters, we got his granddaughters and her offspring, and we continue on through the generations here for a 20-year time horizon. So the profit that we predict on these animals is over a 20-year time horizon, considering multiple generations, discounting it for time, and all in that herd of 100. However, we've got this herd of 100, but because the daughters are kept for more than 1 year, and they've got progeny, and they have progeny, there's actually more expressions than just 100, although some die, and we account for that. And we come up with this, a number that if you're an Angus breeder, you would have maybe tried to play around with it in the last couple of weeks, this 1.297 number. That's all to do with this discounted genetic expressions. So we calculated our indexes based on this 100-cow herd, but our dollar beef index has always been per steer in the feedlot, basically. It's profit per steer in the feedlot. So now we've got this model where we've got 100 cows bred, and there's actually more than 100 genetic expressions from that bull in that scenario. And so we needed to divide by 1.297 to give you a dollar B number that compared to the old dollar B number, which was per animal in the feedlot. So dollar B is still per animal in the feedlot, but when we wanted to put the maternal together with dollar B to make the combined index again for the kind of the whole of value chain profitability, we had to multiply his terminal value by the 1.297 again. And that's why to calculate a dollar C, you take dollar M and you add 1.297 times dollar B. It's not because people say, well, why is dollar B 30% more important than dollar M and dollar C? That's not why that is. It's just to get it back to per calf born in that big 500 self-replacing herd. So what did it look like? Again, dollar beef. That is again the terminal index is profitability from weaning through to slaughter on the rail. The traits that are in new dollar B and old dollar B are exactly the same. There's no difference there. What did we change? There's some differences in endpoint. There's differences in dressing percentage, which I'll talk about here in a minute, and grid assumptions. The correlation at the end of it depends on what group of animals, but it's above 0.9 between new dollar B and old dollar B. So what about dressing percent? What we've done is we've kind of behind the scenes calculated a pseudo dressing percent EPD, if you will. Looking at yearling weight and carcass weight EPDs, what are the animals that are given yearling weight? Like here's just to give you, here's animals at 120 yearling weight. Some of them are below 40 on carcass weight, and some of them are up around 70. So that animal with more carcass weight at a given live weight has got better dressing percent, and so we've actually modeled that in the index. We've also changed the price grid. We're working with Cattle Facts. Cattle Facts puts together a lot of metrics for us that goes into this index, and they track different price grids. And every week there's an industry average, but then every week there's a maximum. What's kind of the best grid out there that week? And there's quite a difference in those grids. And what we're saying with our new approach is, if you're an Angus breeder and you're likely going to be targeting on average more higher quality focus grids. And that's what this is. It's basically a blend of that weekly maximum as well as the industry average to come up with what those are. You'll see, there's more emphasis on prime. Also what we've done is we've actually not only taken the maximum for what you're going to get for marbling premiums, but also what's the maximum around discounts for yield grade. So those as well have become a bit more stringent, but if you're familiar with price grids in the U.S., they don't tend to penalize you for yield grade nearly as much as they do for give you a benefit for marbling. But still, you'll see a bigger discount for yield grade 4s and 5s with the new model. So what's the outcome? Now, this is expected response to selection. So if I was to select on our dollar B index compared to the old one, what kind of response might I see in these traits? So the first thing you might notice is I've got traits up here that aren't actually in the dollar B index, right? We don't have calving ease in dollar B, but because it's correlated with growth rate, we can get an expected, we'll see a response there. So if we're pushing up yearling weight and we aren't paying any attention to birth weight, it's going to come up, right? That only makes sense. Calving ease is going to get worse, but that's pretty small. These are in units of the trait, in terms of EPD units of the trait here. Some of these decimal traits, we had to multiply by 100 just so we could fit them on the scale. So what do you see? There's still, growth rate's still going up. It's not going up quite as fast with the new dollar B index as it was in the old one. So you might say, if that's 16, that's 13, that's a 3-pound difference in yearling weight. And this is after about 10 years of selection. Just around feed efficiency, so there's two things going on here. One is the new model for economics, but there's also new EPDs behind it. And what we'll see here is, we've dropped yearling weight a little bit, but proportionate, we've dropped dry matter intake even more. So we've actually put a little bit more emphasis on efficiency. Docility is an interesting one. We're not emphasizing docility in dollar B at all, but if you look at our EPDs, docility is actually correlated with growth rate. There's actually a positive relationship there, which I think it's interesting. Anyway, that's probably another talk all on its own. And then what about our carcass traits? This is probably the biggest difference. We have put more emphasis on marbling. We're driving up marbling more in the new index, but we're also driving up our yield traits more as well. So more positive response in ribeye, more downward response in fat, which I think is really interesting. If we would have just gone for more marbling and not had that extra emphasis on yield, we wouldn't have seen this. We would have, marbling and ribeye, we would have actually lost yield without putting that in there. So this is the new index, maternal wean calf value. This breeding objective, if you would have looked at dollar W, it's basically the same. There's really no change there. This is identical to dollar W. It's just we've got more traits now in the new index. We have about twice as many traits in the new dollar M as we had in dollar W. Looking back at dollar W when it was put together, calving ease was pretty much brand new, and it wasn't in the index. We've actually added calving ease direct and calving ease maternal into the new index. These traits came out after dollar W was put together, docility, heifer pregnancy, so those are all in the new index. Foot score just got released as well, May 31st, and is in the index. So dollar W, the new dollar M is a lot different to dollar W than new dollar B was to dollar B. And you can see that here with our response to selection. So the blue here is the old dollar W, the green is our new dollar M, and we are not having the same response in growth rate with our new dollar M that we were with the old dollar W. Basically, if you just selected on dollar maternal, you're basically going to hold growth rate basically constant. But you're doing that while you're significantly driving down mature cow weight. So this is, if you think about a lot of people talk about weaning ratios, they want to, how can I wean a bigger calf for a given amount of cow weight? This is going to improve that ratio. You're not going to change your weaning weight, but you're going to do it with smaller cows. And like Jason pointed out, this is all based on economics. This is predicting how much do these bigger cows actually eat, right, and putting that in the index. some other interesting responses that you're not, that you maybe don't think about. Fat. Okay, fat's not in the index. But if I select it on my new maternal index, I'm actually going to increase fat depth. You know, why is that? If I'm actually pushing for cows, I'm pushing for this more moderate frame cow with more docility and more fertility. It's a correlate. It's just through the correlations. Those tend to be the animals that are easier fleshing. I think that makes some sense. So that kind of gives you an idea of the type of animal we're going to select for with our new dollar M. Now we've introduced, in concept anyways, for people that I say test drive, you know, what is this combination index going to look like? It's going to become official a year from now. And it basically combines our maternal index and our terminal index. So maternal is profitability up to weaning, and beef is basically profitability post-weaning. And you can add them together to get our new dollar C using the equation that I talked about. So this is these pie charts are put together to give you some idea of, you know, what's the relative emphasis. And Jason made a point early this morning. You know, this is how much pressure we're putting on the trait. It's not how much response we're going to get. I showed you the response. And those things can be different for various reasons. But I think it's interesting to have a look at what kind of pressure we're putting on these different traits. Our dollar beef, it's actually fairly balanced if we look across the categories. So just these colors all match up. But the orange here is growth. Efficiency here is in gray, 15%. Here is basically marbling, and then yield. But yield here is not just yield grade. It's also dressing yield, right? So that tends to be why that. So it's really your carcass weight is in there, as well as your ribeye area, as well as your fat depth. So that's actually a pretty a bigger piece of the pie, but it really includes some growth traits as well, I guess you could say. Our maternal is actually fairly well balanced, but there is a big downward pressure of almost a third downward pressure basically on cow size. When you put those two things together, and I'll show you here in a minute, that kind of balances out. So the combined index, this is kind of how our traits come out, and I'll just point out a couple things. One is a foot score, and that's what's a new trait, and it's in the index for the first time. And, you know, comments, well, you're going to sacrifice a bull on foot score. You know, foot score is basically, I think, 4% of that combined index. A bull's not going to rise to the top or be at the bottom of that index just on foot score, right? You know, if he was a super heavy cow with no post-weaning growth and poor feed efficiency, yeah, maybe he could be at the bottom of the index. But just based on foot score alone, he's not going to be up at the bottom or at the. So where's our combined index? What's the expected response to selection there? And essentially, we're adding together the maternal and the terminal, and I'll show it later. But our terminal index is fairly highly correlated to the combined, and I'll talk about that. I want to just jump ahead to the mature weight, because I think this tells a good story. If I just select on dollar maternal, yeah, I will select for a smaller cow. But if I select on the combined index, our cow size is actually going to creep up. And that's because we're still putting so much pressure on post-weaning gain in the combined index that cow weight is going to come up. So it's basically there's pressure up and pressure down. On the mature side, on the maternal side, we'd like the cows to be smaller, but the post-weaning side, we want to have more growth rate, and we put them together. We're not going to send growth rate up as much as dollar B was in cows, but we will still push up cow weight in the combined index. So how do they compare? We've got, depending on the trait, but you know, we've got with our indexes here, a dollar B, old versus new, is 0.93. I showed you before here. So this is kind of what a cigar would look like with our, we call this a cigar, but this is old dollar B and new dollar B. And you see, yeah, there's some re-ranking, but for the most part, animals that were at the top are still at the top, and animals at the bottom are still at the bottom, and not huge re-ranking. So what about correlations amongst our indexes? And this was one. So dollar W and dollar maternal is actually only about 0.5 correlated. So we've put in a ton more. We've doubled the traits in the index, and we've actually put a lot more pressure downward on cow weight in the maternal index than what was in the old dollar W. Our dollar B and the combined index is highly correlated, and there's some different reasons for that. One is we've just got more variability in profit. If you look at the standard deviation of dollar B, it's a lot higher than the standard deviation of dollar M. And, you know, why is that? You know, we saw, I think it was maybe John Janot's talk, I forget the talk this morning, he talked about economic relevance of, you know, reproduction is multiple times more important than carcass, multiple times more important than growth. Phenotypically, yes. But we don't have EPDs that spread those profit traits that much on the maternal side. And that's essentially, we do a really good job with carcass traits and marbling, for example, big driver. So we got a lot of range there. You know, we've got a foot score EPD, but we don't have a lot of range yet. We get more data, like we have 2 million ultrasound records. We start getting that many foot scores in. We might see more spread in our foot score EPDs, and we might spread those out more. So this was Dan Moser's idea. You know what? That's overall in the industry, our correlation between dollar B and dollar C is 0.95. But if Steve's theory is true, that if you measure the trait more and you get more spread, we'll put more emphasis then on dollar M. And so we looked here at a herd, and I've got this dollar C star. This is a fairly large herd that's basically has been measuring everything, turning in all the cow weights, doing foot scores, heifer pregnancy, getting all the data in. What's the correlation between dollar B and dollar C in their herd? It's 0.88, right? Dollar M is having more emphasis in that herd on dollar C than the average. And so I think it's a story about recording. This project, I guess, or change in the indexes might change behavior. Now we've got traits that are having an influence in the index that didn't before. And if I want to do well in the index, I want to have animals with better EPDs for those traits. How do I do that? Well, I got to record the data. And there's no magic in the EPD system. It's all driven off of data. If you want to have spread, we got to prove it with records. So we've got a landing page, angus.org/index, where we kind of have all the material that we put together, webinars or little videos or fact sheets or something like that. So that's a place to look for more information, and that's a group that I haven't mentioned, but our communication team basically looked after all that for us, Clint Mefford and his group. I'll turn it over there for questions.
So, Steve, is this index optimized for commercial producers selecting bulls or for elite seed stock producers selecting seed stock? What's the philosophy there? Because I don't think those are quite the same.
No, they can be different. The philosophy really is, it really is commercial. So it's really how are those bulls going to rank for profitability in the commercial segment.
And so because of that, you've got some nonlinearity on at least calving ease direct, and I think it was milk.
Yeah. So
are there other traits that have nonlinearities built in?
Well, yeah, calving ease maternal as well. And just around the calving ease, you know, how that was determined. So John Crowley, I don't know if he's still around, but John works for Abacus now, and he basically analyzed the Angus data in heifers and cows. In terms of calving ease EPDs and actual calving ease outcomes, and not just show with the data, you know, where those, what those curves are. And so that's how we come up with that nonlinearity. The nonlinearity of milk is really based on a lot around the survey and what people are saying, you know, above that I don't want any more milk and below that is not enough.
So if you're building it to select elite seed stock, you'd probably want that to be linear, but you would change the emphasis depending on what the mean of the population is and how you feel that mean of the population fits what your optimal level is.
Then it probably comes down to the individual herd, right? So, you know, what where's the level of calving ease in that seed stock herd might depend on how much emphasis you want to put on it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the need to have a single index to use, but it is interesting that what you do depends on how you want to use it.
I had a somewhat the same question, and is there a plateau on foot scores or heifer pregnancy similar to milk and calving ease direct?
Yeah, not in the way we've modeled it. Now, we don't have nearly as much spread there. You know, to actually, if you think about the unit of foot score versus moving animals up whole categories, it's basically linear on those traits.
Steve, I compliment you guys. I really appreciate particularly the nonlinearity in the calving ease as well as the milk. The milk I still have a bit of an issue with. I like that it's nonlinear, but I'm fairly convinced that it needs to have a drop-off. And I think that's maybe reflected in when you showed the response to selection over the next 10 years because of the fact that milk is still climbing, even though the basic idea is we want it to keep it the same, but it's still climbing. And I still have some concern that even though you're not giving them benefit, the fact that you're not penalizing for those extremely high milks may be what's causing that.
Well, yeah, some of that increase in milk that you see can be due to correlations. So if you look at the correlation between our EPDs, there's actually a positive correlation between milk and marbling. So if you think about that combined index, you're putting a lot of emphasis on marbling. So some of that can actually cause a drag up in milk. Even though the emphasis on milk might not be there, you're actually getting it through some other traits.
But it was there on just the maternal one as well.
Yeah, so that, you know, it could be due to core. Yeah, so there is still a positive of, yeah, there's no benefit once you get up into the high level, but there's still a benefit from, and what we've got there is a response overall. So it's not going up as much as it was in Dollar W.
Yeah.
I kind of did an analysis with Dollar W versus Dollar M on milk. You know, how many bulls are above 30 on the old, so we got 100, the top 100 bulls on Dollar W, 56 were above 30. I think there's 9 above 30 on Dollar M. So it has changed the profile of bulls at the top.
Changes for the benefit of commercial cattle producers. Confident that wasn't easy. The correlation between dollar B and dollar C, do you have a suspicion of how much that may drop with the inclusion of a sustained cow fertility kind of EPD in dollar M?
Yeah, we've dealt with this. Thought about this a little bit. So in the index, we've got heifer pregnancy, docility, foot score, and they're modeled essentially in the index how they're going to contribute to longevity, basically. So when we come out with a longevity EPD, it's basically longevity that's left over after you've accounted for the ones that leave the herd due to bad feet or leave the herd due to pregnancy outcomes or leave the herd due to docility. So that reduces it somewhat. And you know, based on the survey, number one trait was longevity. So we do expect it to have an impact, but we think having those other traits already in there is going to reduce it somewhat.
Just quickly, so I came in late. Was the survey principally to membership of AAA, or so? My question is, what proportion of seed stock versus commercial producers helped inform the answers to the survey?
Yeah. So I think we're 2/3 seed stock, 1/3. I think Jason might have had it right at the very beginning, but. We sent it out, obviously, to all Angus members, but we tried to kind of cast the net in terms of getting other people to participate. And so that's the benefit, I guess, of having Angus Media, because we got the Angus Beef Bulletin, and we got a very long list of commercial producers that received that. So they all got a postcard, I think it was, in the mail to work through the survey. And I think it was roughly 2/3 So lion's share our breeders, 2/3 our breeders. But we were actually pretty happy. 736 there, commercial cow-calf producers, and that's 29% versus 63 our own breeders. When we first did this, one of the questions was, well, how many responses do you need? And Abacus said, well, we did the same thing in Australia, dairy industry. We had like 700 or 500 or something like that. And I thought, well, I think we'll be able to do that. And so actually, we basically got as many commercial producers responding as we had, as they were hoping kind of for total. So still a good number. You know, Jason pointed out the feedlot. We didn't have a big response from feedlot, but the ones that responded actually are responsible for a lot of animals. That's pretty typical, I guess. Ken.
My question is, and maybe I missed it, but if I select for your maternal index or use your maternal index, do I move heifer pregnancy?
Yeah, let me see. Yeah. So heifer pregnancy was one we didn't scale it up in terms of on the graph, which probably should have done so we can see it a bit better. So there's our heifer pregnancy. Is not like with our marbling and those decimal traits, we multiply by 100 so we can get on the same scale. So this is, it's not, dollar W is basically, you might as well say flat. This is going up whatever that is, two or three points on heifer pregnancy. So that's heifer pregnancy EPD. Positive. Yeah.
The graph that shows the 10-year response assumes what kind of selection pressure? Did you use actual selection pressure indicative of what the industry's been using through AI, or did you, I mean, how did you come up with the 10-year? Because when I look at your genetic trends, your change in most of those traits is faster than what shows on your 10-year deal.
Yeah. So that's, it's actually related to one standard deviation response in the index, and that typically is about 10 years of selection in beef cattle. So it's actually in, you know, If we're going to move that index by a standard deviation, how would all those traits respond? Well, we'd have to go back and calculate that, I guess. You know, we could look at the trend and we could look at the standard deviation of dollar B. Probably not, because people haven't just been selecting on dollar B, right? That's a good idea. I can go back and do that. But you know, we can We could change that to 1.2 standard deviations or something, but the relative, it's just going to, the story's the same. The bars are just going to go up and down a little bit. Yes, sir.
With the correlation of DMI to growth, how many progeny are we going to have feed efficiency tested to find an outlier that doesn't eat as much but can grow more?
How many progeny? Think about that, in terms of accuracy, I guess, if your residual average daily gain EPD. I haven't done the math to tell you exactly what that is, but I think that'd be the way you'd want to do that.
That's what we want.
That's what you want.
And the correlation jumped a lot of the high growth bulls to drive their dialer or their dry matter intake up substantially.
Yeah.
Now we got to figure out how many progeny or what do we have to do to get it to come back to find the outliers which we want.
Sure. Yeah. So the only that correlation is kind of fitting the average. So if a bull tends to be more yearling weight, he will eat more on average. If you want to find the outlier, then only the data will drive us to allow us to find that. So I guess typically, I think if you think about seed stock, people are measuring those yearling bulls themselves, right? So they've got their own record, which for dry matter intake has got a decent heritability, so you got some accuracy there. But yeah, we're only going to find those outliers with the data. Otherwise, you just get average. Otherwise, you're just going to get the expectation based on the relationship between size and growth. If you are bigger and grow faster, you on average are going to eat more. Some animals don't do that. We've got to find those, but we're going to have to do that with the data.
Okay.